Dr. Dennis McKenna, that's got to bring back some memories for you, I suppose, huh?
Absolutely.
You were there, and just about at that time. You know, socially, do you think, Doctor, that it was the right direction at the wrong time?
How do you mean?
Well, I mean the whole 60s thing, the whole San Francisco scene, the whole national scene, frankly. It was moving toward a gentler, more aware social time for the young people, but then sort of the war got in the way, and then we started the war on drugs and war and war and war. But
right.
For a while there, we were headed in a bit of a different direction, weren't we?
Well, we were headed in a bit of a different direction, and yes, I think that the war in Vietnam had a lot to do with derailing it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that also just sort of the disillusion that happened in the American dream that probably started with the assassination of Kennedy, if not before. I mean, I think that really impacted a lot of people in my generation. You know, I can remember when that happened, and both Terrence and myself, we were just in a state of shock for days after that happened. There was little you could do except just stare at television. You know, a lot of people of our generation thought that Kennedy was, you know, was the sign of some needed change. And when he was struck down, I think it was kind of a message that no, nothing is really going to change. I mean, you know, however flawed he may have been as a man, I think he symbolized a change for a lot of people. And I think when that went away, you know, I think it began the process of deepening cynicism that has continued. And then
we sort of moved toward, as the decades went by, it seems like we moved from where we were in the 60s and where we were headed to a more materialistic society.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of replaced what went on with the 60s with materialism. Anyway, listen, I want to ask you a question that's a sensitive question and about Terrence, and it was actually a question that I asked Terrence, and I guess I would like to ask you. Many, many people said brain tumor.
Right.
Why should we not believe that it's possible that some of the substances and chemicals and things that Terrence did contributed to that, may have been a main contributor to that brain tumor?
Right.
I'm sure you've thought about it.
Well, I have thought about it, and the answer is that there's simply no evidence for it. If psychedelics or cannabis caused brain tumors, there would be a lot more
brain tumors,
that kind of thing, than there are. Brain tumors, that particularly the kind that he had, is actually an extremely rare form of cancer. Only 20,000 cases a year supposedly are reported in this country, although I personally think it must be more than that. But as cancers go, this one is rare. And, you know, there's simply no evidence. There's no correlation between your intake of marijuana, say, and brain tumors. In fact, there is research that has been done that shows that cannabis, you know, tetrahydrocannabinol may inhibit brain tumors.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, for my brother, this didn't work, but, you know, I mean, you can say that, but it's not really a fair criticism. You know, I mean, another person who maybe never touches any of these things may get a brain tumor, and you may say, well, you know, it's because they led a bad life or something.
Sure.
I mean, I just don't, it just doesn't hold up.
All right. Before going to the phone lines here, Scott in Sonora, California asks a question that may not even be relevant, or you may know what he's talking about, but he says, please ask Dr. McKenna if he remembers what he was experiencing when he said that, quote, he didn't want to be a giant insect, end quote, at the experiment at La Carrera.
Is La Chirera.
La Chirera, okay.
Right.
So it rings a bell, huh?
Yeah, absolutely.
So you didn't want to be a giant insect. What was that all about?
Well, it's hard to explain that without sort of going into the whole narrative of what got us to go to La Truera at the first place, which we started talking about at the top of the program, but then we sort of got derailed into other subjects. But I guess to put it in a nutshell, a lot of the ideas and concerns that we were sort of processing at La Truera in these hyper-psychedelic states had to do with the notion of insect metamorphosis, and you know, insects undergo several stages of metamorphosis, like a butterfly, a caterpillar turning into a butterfly is the classic example. Mm-hmm. And we had some notions, whether correct or not, at least we thought at the time they seemed correct, that the tryptamines and the beta-carbolines in this plant environment had to do with a kind of an actual metamorphosis in humans.
I see.
And that, you know, and that was what the basis of that was about. I wasn't so sure I wanted to undergo this metamorphosis.
I see.
And I was convinced that I was about to.
I bet you saw the fly, didn't you?
Actually, I've never seen it.
Oh, you haven't seen the fly?
I haven't seen it.
It's just as well,
I should put it on my list.
Uh-huh. Obviously, you're not exactly an anti-drug poster child, and nor was your brother. Your brother was a brilliant, brilliant man. You're a brilliant, brilliant man. And a lot of people who are fighting this drug war, I don't think, like hearing you speak, because you're obviously brilliant, and somehow the brain cells have stayed in place throughout whatever it is you have done, as was the case with Terrence.
So far.
All right. First time caller line, you're on the air with Dr. Dennis McKenna. Hi.
Hi, Art. I'm Laura, and I'm a PhD candidate in a Washington, D.C. area university, and I'm doing the first ethnographic life history narrative-based research study with near-death experiencers.
Oh?
So I'm getting some very interesting findings, which I'd like to talk to you about more at some other time. Now, you guys kept talking while I was after I made the notes I wanted to make, because I had a chance to spend some time with Terrence and Palenque, and I had a couple comments that I wanted from Dennis. But a question you just raised about the brain tumor and the drug use.
Yes.
Raised the issue for me of, remember the Miami guy who had the strange heart attack and the bizarre little sort of twist in his vein or artery?
Oh, yes.
And the Native Americans who pointed out that, you know, from where their point of view, that's called an energy attack. I'm not sound too paranoid. I just wanted to throw that in as another question that might be asked. I have a wonderful quote from Terrence about an experience of Dennis's that your insect thing made me want to read, but let me hold off because maybe we don't have time. But I'm loving hearing from Dennis, and I love spending time with Terrence. Read all their work. I think the research that they have done and the personal accounts that they have shared are not simply valuable, but extremely brave to stand out on the edge they're standing out on. And there's tremendous resistance. As Terrence said, culture is not your friend in certain contexts.
I would agree with that.
And I wanted to raise this. The reason I was there is I got a scholarship that year. That fellow from Texas gave some scholarships. And I got to go to Palenque and spend this 10 days having this wonderful ethnobotanical field seminar with an incredible group of people, including the Shulgins and Terrence, and because I realized that there were analogs between near-death experience narratives, and I'm a near-death experiencer, as was my mother, which, you know, fueled my interest.
Well, you obviously heard the comments earlier with respect to DMT.
Well, no.
Oh, you
did? Both the light-related experiences related to ayahuasca. With now, a lot is in the research, near-death studies research about ketamine, which I know the least about. But I went there because that woman who was involved in Iboga research, Ibogaine.
Deborah Nash. Dr. Deborah Nash.
Dr. Deborah Nash was going to be there. And there is this analog between NDEs and that experience in the Life Review that's very, very obvious. Mm-hmm. I also wanted to say you hadn't mentioned Scott Pastora, nor, I think, ketamine, and I'd like to hear what you have to say about them. The other thing I found that was bizarre, that didn't come up in clinical NDE model-shaped research, this is work I'm continuing now that I did 2 years' work of field research on for my MA. Now it's continuing as my just-approved dissertation work, is that there was this major, inexplicably high incidence of narratives where it was clear there was sort of overlap between that you could take a batch of these, change a few characteristics, hand them to alien encounter researchers like John Mack,
mm-hmm.
or near-death experience researchers, and each of those groups would go near-death experience or alien encounter.
Mm-hmm.
And because so many of my informants, it came up with so many of my informants, and the only other research that's come up in that high incidence is PMH Atwater, who, like me, her methodology involves more person-centered, informant-generated narrative. So you get data you wouldn't get. I would never have thought to mention a strange experience that I had, one connected maybe with the one that Dennis and Terrence had in True Hallucinations, which I'd love to hear him talk about.
All right. Listen, we're way short on time.
Yeah, so I'd like to know what does he make of this overlap and the fact that we're trying to model experiences we may not know as much about as we think
we know. Okay.
A lot of things have been touched on. I think that this notion, this business of the aliens and encounters with the aliens in abduction experiences, the near-death experiences, and also in psychedelics. What do I make of it? I'm not sure what to make of it. On one hand, the rational reductionist part of me says, it's got to be part of the self. Certainly with psychedelics, you would think, no matter how other it seems to be, ultimately these things are coming from some part of the self. It may not be a part that you know very much. That's the reductionist model. The other, it's possible to look at it another way. Maybe there are other dimensions. And what we mean by other dimensions, I'm not sure. Maybe some other level of etheric vibration.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? More familiar, more, other people on your program know more about this than I do. I just feel like all bets are off, in a sense, that particularly when we're trying to understand the mind and what the capabilities of the mind are and how it interfaces with reality, we can't really make any assumptions.
Well, our nation's best physicists are talking about multiple dimensions.
Well, exactly.
And who is to say that
parallel worlds?
That there is not a path and a door opened. Comment briefly, if you would, on ketamine. Ketamine is being called the NDE drug.
My own experience with ketamine is extremely limited. I've only taken it one time in my life. And I didn't find it, that it wasn't pleasant for me. It was interesting. It was sort of, it was sort of like an anti-psychedelic to me, in the sense that it seemed to be a state of sensory deprivation and complete isolation from the body.
Wow.
And sort of like, how in states of sensory deprivation you start to confabulate, you start to fill that empty space.
Yes.
With thoughts.
Yes, of course.
And ketamine was like that for me. Beyond that, I don't know. It may be the NDE drug. I'm not sure. My own candidate for that would be something like 5-methoxy-DMT. Which is actually an order of magnitude more potent than DMT in terms of what the dose is, but its effects are somewhat similar, although it doesn't have a marked visual effect. You don't see, colored hallucinations as so much on 5-methoxy-DMT, but yet it's just as profound, and it seems to be, at least, again, my experience is somewhat limited with this, but the few times I have encountered it, you do seem to go to a place which seems close to what they describe as this near-death experience.
That's amazing. All right. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Dr. Dennis McKenna. Good morning.
Good morning, Art. Good morning, Dennis.
Good morning. God, I'm having a flashback.
yeah, I bet.
I was a runaway flower child in 1964, became an electric acid test flower child, Ken Kesey style. Wound up in 1967 living on a hippie houseboat in the you know, three boats down from Alan Watts. And everybody I knew who used psychedelic drugs were very brilliant, very intelligent, very creative people. Okay? I have, over the years, I mean, in those days, I was a teenager in my early 20s, teenager and early 20s. I used lots and lots of psychedelics of all kinds, in Ozzy acid, psilocybin mushrooms, mescaline, peyote buttons, DMT.